Thanks, Ali. I'm very happy to share with you some preliminary data from a study that we have been working on for some time now at La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia, within the context of a program called the Victorian Autism Specific Early Learning and Care Centre, or Victorian AESL, which is this centre you can see here. The Victorian AESL is three things at the same time. It's a community childcare program within a long daycare setting for preschoolers with autism, aged 18 months to 5 years. It's also an early intervention center. Children enrolled in this childcare receive the Early Start Denver model. And we also have a research program, thanks to our partnership with the Olga Tennison Autism Research Center, directed by Professor Cheryl Dissanayake, and our ongoing collaboration with Sally Rogers' team at the UC Davis Mind Institute. Now, what is our research about? Mainly, we want to investigate whether doing the Early Start Denver model in a group-based community setting is feasible and effective. And we were very happy when we saw those results that Sally has already showed. Looking at the group level, children had very positive outcomes in terms of cognitive and language functioning. However, these types of effectiveness study focus on the group level. Our research agenda is also informed by the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability. This is a document that was ratified by Australia in 2009. Australia was one of the first countries to ratify this convention. Article 25 of this UN convention specifies that all persons with disability in Australia and the countries who ratified this convention are entitled to receive services including early intervention designed to minimize and prevent further disabilities. Now, as opposed to the efficacy or the effectiveness studies approach, in a human rights approach, the focus is not on the group, it's on the individual. It means that every single child, every single person with disability who is receiving a service is entitled to the same right of receiving a program designed to minimize and prevent further disabilities. If there's even one child who is not benefiting from what we're offering, we're violating human rights. And this is why we take individual differences very seriously. Now, these are the same results that you saw in the graph before, but looking at each individual child in our first cohort of children. And these are their gains here, expressed in Mullen age equivalent scores. Basically, here you see this child during 1 year of treatment, 12 months, gained 12 months equivalent expressed in Mullen age equivalent scores. It means that the developmental rate is normalized, is learning with a developmental rate that is expected for a typical child. And as you can see, most children had a developmental rate that is either normal or accelerated, but some children don't, like this child here, which I will call Antonio. This child, he learned something, but not nearly as much as this child. Let's call him Francesco. These two children are entitled to the same right, but they're benefiting from the service that we're providing to a very different degree, and we need to understand why. Now, if you look at the literature on what we know about children who are slow responders, like Antonio, compared to children who are quick responders, like Francesco, you find that often the studies report that children like Antonio have lower IQ, or sometimes have lower language at baseline. Some other study looked at having lower imitation skills or other skills. But this information doesn't have much practical utility. What I want to understand is how do I help Antonio being in the other side of the graph. Why that information is not that helpful? First, because these constructs are too broad. They encompass many different processes. IQ, for example. One can fail an IQ test for 100 different reasons. There's also issues with conceptual and operational consistency of these constructs across study. For example, imitation is measured and conceptualized very differently in different studies that looked at characteristics of responders and non-responders in different treatments. There are also issues with circular reasoning. For example, IQ is a good example. It's not that low IQ leads to poor learning. Low IQ describes poor learning. It reflects poor learning. It's a description. It's not an explanation of why the child is not learning. So one key aspect of improving our understanding of what makes Antonio different from Francesco is to select putative predictors, the measures that we collect at the beginning of the treatment, looking at measures that reflect the learning mechanisms demanded by the treatment program, based on hypothesized mechanisms of change. And that's because different models are different in terms of the processes through which the child learns, and different children differ in learning preferences and learning resources. So it is possible that Antonio brings his specific learning style or learning preference that will fit with a specific treatment model that capitalizes on that, on those sets of skills that Antonio has. Not assuming, but knowing that each child with autism can learn if we teach in the right way. Now, we wanted to look at this question within our ESDM group, and given that we fully agree on the fact that correlates of change within one group doesn't tell a story about predictors of outcomes, we're comparing our children to two other programs, an ABA DTT program in Melbourne and a structured teaching program at Griffith University in Queensland. And what we wanted to look at is, first of all, identify the main differences between our program and these other programs, not just in theory, but in the way the therapy was actually delivered in the community settings where treatment was happening. And we identified a series of features that differ between the models. And then we wanted to see whether pre-treatment differences in preferences or responsivity for one versus the other style, comparing these different programs, will predict treatment outcomes after 1 year of treatment. So we will come up with measures that are supposed to capture these different ways of teaching and see whether responsivity or preference for one versus another way of teaching at the beginning of the program will tell us a story about who's responding to what 1 year later. Now, the first aspect I'm going to focus on is the playfulness. What is the rationale? What is the argument for having a playful interactive style within the early start Denver model? We heard it already. The idea is that engagement in playful social exchange facilitates learning in typical development, and therefore it is possible that in the SDM, an effectively rich and playful interaction will facilitate the child's pleasure and social engagement, even if the child has autism, and this will facilitate learning. Now, in our control group, and this is about the specific centers that we were working with, the style of the therapist was more neutral. And the reason for that, and we spoke with these people and we looked at the references of why they're doing what they're doing, is this. The rationale for the argument for using a more neutral style is that a playful style involves extra social processing, which will interfere with understanding instructions and tasks and might even provoke stress and anxiety. And an argument that I heard a lot is that the moment you are playful, you asking the child more. There's more demand, so the child will be overwhelmed. And the hypothesized mechanism there is that a neutral, directive style will facilitate the child's learning by minimizing social processing demands, and children with ASD prefer clear and ambiguous information. Now, I don't want to contrast one idea versus the other. I want to see whether these two different beliefs or narratives on how to deliver treatment somehow fit with the actual learning style of a child before doing the treatment. So we created a task which is an eye tracking task, and what you see is a still from a video that we're showing, where there's an adult who is demonstrating novel actions. And one adult is playful and the other one is neutral. And what we're looking at using eye tracking is whether children, these are children before the treatment, will be more interested in the playful or the neutral and will be more likely to imitate the playful or the neutral, and whether this tells us a story about who is going to respond to which treatment. Now, one reason why I love eye tracking is because you can use it with all children without the need to give any, to rely on verbal instructions. We just have the children watching and see if they spontaneously look at one versus the other or imitate. Now, these are very preliminary data from the ESDM group. It's only 20 children at this point. We found that those kids, overall, half of the kids like the playful better, half of the kids likes the neutral better. We administered the same task to a group of children with Williams syndrome, and all of them like the playful better, and typically developing children too. But within the autism group, and these are the kids who did the SDM, those kids who had an early preference for the playful style were the ones who responded more, who had better gains during 1 year of therapy. Here I'm using an index that is rate of skills acquisition, which is the amount of change in age equivalent divided by the time elapsed between pre-treatment and post-treatment. Response to a playful adult was correlated with interest in neutral adult was not, and this even take into account the baseline IQ. Now, imitation is another area where the two, the three programs were different. In the ESDM, imitation is conceived as a social tool that supports the establishment of emotional connectedness and social cognitive development, because we learn this from typical development literature. And an effectively rich and playful interaction will elicit spontaneous imitation of novel action, gesture, facial expressions, and words. In the other groups, imitation was targeted in a very different way in the context of an instrumental use of imitation during a very explicit instructions to imitate. And the reason, the argument for that is that imitation is a learning tool that can support the acquisition of practical skills and should be reinforced by clear instrumental outcomes. And again, the hypothesized mechanism of treatment in the comparison group is that if you give a clear and unambiguous instruction to imitate actions that lead to a clear instrumental outcome, that will facilitate learning of new functional behaviors. So we came up with another another task or measure where we basically distinguish these two different types of imitation, which, by the way, this distinction reflects a distinction that has been relevant in developmental theory for a long time, and there's even evidence that these different types of imitation are implemented by different brain areas. But basically, one task involved the child following a specific instruction to imitate in order to achieve a specific goal. So there was a sequence of action that the child was supposed to imitate that will lead to a very clear outcomes. In this case, there was a reward in the box. In order to open that box, there was a sequence of action to be imitated. Versus a social imitation task where I'm just engaging with the child and doing silly things like and without asking the child to imitate, see that if in that context the child will imitate and how often will do it. Two different processes. And here I have data. Again, the question here is whether performance in instrumental versus social imitation at the beginning of the treatment predict which children are going to respond to the ESDM versus the comparison group. Here I have data with 42 children. And what we found is that those children who do imitate often in the social context, the non-elicited, the spontaneous social imitation that doesn't lead to any instrumental outcomes, were children who seem to undergo more positive gains, while there was no correlation with the instrumental imitation task. This is the ESDM group. Again, I don't have the control group data yet, but I will soon. And this, again, this was above and beyond the initial level of IQ. How about language? That's an area where the difference between our program and the comparison groups was very remarkable. In our ESDM group, we will target communication focusing on verbal language based on the idea that an emotionally rich and socially rewarding interaction will facilitate language acquisition in typical development, and we wanted to have the same framework to facilitate acquisition of language and communication in our group of children with ASD. In the comparison groups, there was a lot of emphasis on visual supports, and the argument for using visual supports to facilitate language in the comparison groups was that children with ASD are visual learners, prefer highly concrete, consistent stimuli, the language channel is the weakest, language is ambiguous and abstract, and the hypothesized mechanism of treatment response in the comparison groups is that visual have a one-to-one correspondence with objects, it will reduce ambiguity, capitalizing strength in visual skills and interest in visual details. Again, these are different beliefs, different narratives, different ways that actually change the way the therapist delivers treatment and might be relevant to different actual learning style or learning preferences or learning resources that different children have. So we were really interested to see whether children before the treatment were interested in visual stimuli versus being interested in people and their language. And we used another eye tracking task where there is a person who is delivering an instruction using verbal communication and having also some pictures to show the same instruction. And using eye tracking, we were just looking where the child was looking at. And we found remarkable individual differences. I'm going to show you the videos. This is what the children will actually see. And you will see a red dot. This is where the child was looking at. And for this child here, for example, well, you can't hear the sound, but if you are a visual learner, you should understand the instruction. Let me try again this. Well, she's saying something like, I want you to pick up the block and put it in the cup. And as you can see, this child is focusing the attention on the person's face and then going and looking at the pictures. Well, some other children did this. They were focusing on the pictures the entire time and ignoring the face completely. Don't worry, almost finished. Yeah. And this child, for example, is looking at the face the entire time and not looking at the pictures, while this child is looking at the person's finger and not looking at the face or the pictures. Now the question is, are those kids who look more at the face would be more responsive to a treatment that capitalizes on social attention versus children who might be more responsive to pictures being responsive to treatment that capitalizes on using pictures. We found that attention to face but not attention to pictures was associated with response in the ESDM group. Once again, I don't have the control groups yet, but I will soon. So I'm going to end with just a few thoughts. So these are very preliminary data. We're just addressing these questions at the proof of concept level, but we did find statistically significant associations in the predicted directions for all expected associations. We can, at this point, have the working hypothesis that children with a preference for social and playful stimuli might be well-equipped for the SDM. We need to wait for the control group to see whether those who are responsive to non-social and visual stimuli, like Antonio, may be responsive to treatments that capitalize on those preferences. When we were comparing the different narratives or the different beliefs or the different ideas that the therapists in the different groups have, there was a clear pattern of a different view of what autism treatment is about. With one hand, the more structured approach talking about the importance of giving clear, unambiguous information and input. Simplify the input so that the child is not overwhelmed by processing many things, versus the notion in the early start Denver model of providing an effectively rich and engaging input, so not simplifying but amplifying the input. And it might be that children's response to measures that reflect this different dimension can guide treatment selection in the future. To do this, we need to translate folk psychology and folk pedagogy concepts like visual learning into valid and measurable constructs. And I will end here. Thank you for the attention, and thank you for all the people who supported this program.